Welcome to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. I'm Barry Hennessy. Sean Delaney is off this week. On our website, insideed.com, you can listen back to 138 previous Inside Education programmes. You can also get the programme delivered straight to your MP3 player thanks to our weekly podcast, which you can download from iTunes. On this week's programme, we turn our attention to the state exams and to an aspect of them that's often either unreported or simply taken for granted. We're talking about reasonable accommodations for candidates with special needs. Although most of us think of exams as taking place in large halls with students sitting in neat straight rows of desks, the reality of most Irish schools during the month of June is one of ordinary classrooms being used as separate centres for candidates with a range of permanent or long-term conditions, in addition to more temporary problems such as bereavement or injury. The range of specific reasonable accommodations is considerable, ranging from extra time on the day of the exam to a modified marking scheme during the correction phase. Over the next half hour, we'll try to get into the detail of what's available and the basis on which applications are made and considered. Here to guide us is Sally Maguire, Special Educational Needs Teacher at St. Raphaella's Secondary School in Stillorgan and also Vice President of the ASTI. You're welcome to Inside Education, Sally.
Thank you, Barry.
Well, I suppose by way of introduction, Sally, reasonable accommodations, I suppose the question would be, what are they and what are they not?
They are not compensation. They are assistance for students who have special educational needs, of a huge variety of special educational needs. As you said already, most students will be going into an exam hall in June and doing their exam with up to 30 other students in a particular centre, and the superintendent will be looking after that centre. However, for some students who have special educational needs, they cannot be in a centre with 30 other students, and therefore they have these reasonable accommodations which allows them to be in a separate centre with a separate superintendent.
And I suppose part of this is to do with the fact that over the last 10 years, and indeed a little bit more, there's been more and more mainstreaming going on. There's a lot more students who in the past might not have been in the mainstream school setting right the way through to Leaving Cert who are now present in mainstream schools, but who still require a form of reasonable accommodation when they come to sit particularly a crucial exam like the Leaving Cert.
That's absolutely true. Since the Education Act and the EPSON Act, which is for persons with special educational needs, all of these students are now integrated into mainstream if they so wish, and if it's the best place for them. So we have a huge amount more of them than we would have had before that.
Let's maybe, I suppose, try to get a sense of just what's on offer. There are people who will have physical disabilities. They may have sight loss. They may have hearing loss. There'll be people who will require access to a reader or a scribe. Just give me a sense of, I suppose, the broad range of reasonable accommodations that are available to students who otherwise would be at a disadvantage sitting their state exams.
Well, let's start with the hearing loss and the sight loss, first of all. That's something where a special centre would be vital. So that if in the case of a hearing loss, where the students wouldn't be submitted to outside sounds and all that kind of stuff. And they also, in things like an oral exam, they would have special equipment to listen to that.
They'd have a loop, kind of a more personal player sometimes.
That's right,
they?
And it would be at a specific pitch maybe, or they might have specific equipment that would be at a specific pitch for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's more complicated for people with visual difficulties because they would perhaps need a reader. They would perhaps need a scribe or a tape recorder. They could speak their exams into a tape recorder. They could use a computer or a laptop. They would also have access to braille papers, to enlarged scripts, to modified exams, which means, for example, if there was a diagram on the paper, the exam might be modified to leave out that diagram and have mm-hmm. a different question in instead.
I imagine that there's a reasonable amount of notice required in order to ensure that there are sufficient modified papers available.
Oh, absolutely. We would be making applications this time of year for Leaving Cert 2013.
And obviously we're going to come back to the whole because, I mean, there's an extensive timeline, I know, for the application for various types of reasonable accommodation. Some candidates require extra time as well. And this is a decision that can often be made more locally at school level, I think.
It can. In the case of special time, sometimes it can be made by the school. If it's a case, for example, where a student might have a physical difficulty where they might need to walk around the room a bit, where they might need to take rest breaks, something like that, the school can give them an extra 10 minutes for each exam.
Because, of course, if they are in a special centre and if they're not going to be leaving that centre, if they're not going to be interacting with candidates from other centres, the integrity of the exam isn't
absolutely
in any way being compromised there. Of course, it's... does the State Examinations Commission require very tangible evidence of, you know, of the requirement for every type of reasonable accommodation? Let's say, for example, somebody who has sight loss or a hearing disability, they have to provide verifiable evidence, I presume, do they?
Absolutely. There has to be a doctor's report. And in the case of both of those disabilities, there is an assigned visiting teacher for the deaf or for the visually impaired, and that teacher comes around to the school at regular intervals during the year, and they are required to write a letter stating the necessity for whatever accommodations are needed, whether it's larger print or whether it's a tape recorder or a computer or whatever.
Of course, there's accommodations that are part of the process of sitting the exams. I mean, these are the ones that are, I suppose, visible in the sense of the special centres and everything that we're talking about, and the use of computers to write your answers. But also during the marking process, you've got the existence of modified marking schemes for candidates, say, for example, who have waivers in respect of things like spelling and grammar.
That's right. In the case of the language subjects, the spelling and grammar grammar waiver may be assigned. And that means that the student in that language will not be marked for spelling and grammar. And that would be the case of a student who had difficulties like dyslexia or something of that nature, a language difficulty or a spelling difficulty.
Mm-hmm. And again, just, I mean, to come back, because I think it's important just at the outset of the conversation that we get clear to people that there's a set of principles that underpin all of this. And they were laid down about 10 years ago by the State Exams Commission following a consultation process. And the point being that these are designed to give candidates who require some form of reasonable accommodation to get them up to a level playing pitch.
That's exactly it. That's what I was saying earlier, that it's to bring them to that level playing pitch, not to compensate them in any way for their disability, but to bring them to a level playing pitch the same way as everybody else. And that's why these accommodations were brought in the first place.
Mm. Now, we're going to get through, I mean, I'm looking forward to discussing, and I know you are as well, the whole timeline for applying, and certainly for many of the ones of the accommodations that we've already mentioned, readers, scribes, modified marking schemes, there's a long and a very detailed process to be gone through. But of course, sometimes a candidate might need an accommodation at very short notice. If somebody suffers, say, a bereavement or an accident or is in hospital when the exams get underway, are the SEC, in your experience as a special needs teacher, fairly quick to act and quick to grant?
In fairness, in that case, I have to say they are. When you think about it, Barry, there are 70,000 students doing the exams every year, and out of that number, there are bound to be incidents that are going to happen at the last minute. Yeah, it's also summertime, so it's sports time, and there are broken limbs all over the place betimes. And in that case, they do act, and lots of things happen at the last minute. As you say, bereavement would be a huge thing. And any sort of an injury or an illness or anything like that. Always we have heard instances of where you would have, for example, candidates doing exams in hospitals, and the SEC would provide somebody to go into the hospital and sit with them and do the exam with, I don't mean do the exam with them, supervise the exam in the hospital. And that happens. And it also happens in special centres and schools that at the last minute we have to provide extra special centres for reasons like that.
There are, I know there are certain limits. I mean, even though every attempt is made to provide the reasonable accommodation, I know the SEC does draw a few lines, as it were, and that expression I think might be a tad unfortunate in that I'm talking about something like art, where, for example, they won't allow a person to draw for a candidate who has a difficulty, for example, in writing or whatever.
They won't. And how could they?
Obviously.
That would be impossible.
Yeah.
But they do provide, for example, somebody who was doing a practical home economics exam. They would provide what they would say would be a helper to go in for somebody who mightn't be able to read ingredients or who might have a difficulty with fine motor skills and mixing stuff and that kind of thing. So they would be there for them. They can't do any of the work for them, but they can be there to assist.
Well, you're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. This is Barry Hennessy with you this week, and my guest is Sally Maguire, who is the Special Educational Needs Teacher at St. Raffaella's Secondary School in Stillorgan. And we're talking about the topic of reasonable accommodations in the state exams, which, of course, is a topical enough issue at this time of year. Let's come now, I suppose, to some of the reasonable accommodations that people out there are likely to be fairly familiar with. And we're talking about readers and scribes, spelling and grammar waivers, and even exemptions from certain components of subjects. Is there a necessity for a psychological report if somebody is looking to say, be granted a waiver or a reader or a scribe?
In the case of a waiver, a reader or a scribe for a specific learning difficulty, which would be something like dyslexia, as I said before, yes, generally speaking, they do. However, the application procedure requires you to submit three pieces of the uncorrected of the student's work, especially if you're applying for a spelling and grammar waiver. It also requires a report from, not a report, but there's a space on the paper for three teachers to indicate the level of the student in that particular subject. And they also, in some instances then, there would be in-house, in-school testing, where you would be doing not assessment tests as such, well, assessment tests that are not exams as such, where you would be testing reading or testing spelling or that kind of stuff. And sometimes those will suffice to get as far as the situation where the NEP psychologist will then come out and assess the student before the exam, maybe in the November, December, before the Leaving Cert.
Just in terms of the student's work, that, you know, of the homework or whatever that would be uncorrected and that would be assessed, is it the case that it has to be work in English or indeed in Irish if it's a Gael school, that you're not going to be granted a spelling and grammar waiver in French because your level in French specifically is weaker than or suggests a problem, that it's really based on your work in English?
It will be based on your work in English generally, yes. Yeah. Yes, but it might be a geography question or a biology question, but it would be in English or in Irish if it was the Gael school.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole issue of psychological reports, and it would be wonderful if you could clear it up a little bit for us, because I suppose it is something that has been discussed in recent years, the fact that it's quite difficult for schools to get psychological reports for as many students as they would wish to get them for. Is there anything that you think the State Exams Commission could do in order to make access to psychological reports more equitable, or what's your take really on, I suppose, the equitability of the system?
I think there's a huge issue of equitability in that if the parents are in a position to pay out for a psychological assessment, it's much quicker. We can say to a parent, look, this is what's needed. We can't guarantee you that we will have an assessment this year, but if you have, and it probably, I think at the moment it's €500 or €600 for it, certainly it was in the last couple of years, for psychological assessment. And if the parents can do that themselves, then the assessment will come in a lot quicker and you can gauge. It's very much better, obviously, for us as teachers, because you know how to help the child before the exam ever comes up. But it's also very useful for the exams as well.
It's an emotive issue, this, I suppose, Sally, because I suppose parents who don't have the means, you know, might be inclined to think that there could be some advantage, you know, being conferred solely because of monetary means. But of course, there's no guarantee that the psychological report that one pays for will be accepted by NEPS or by the SEC. It doesn't follow. One doesn't lead to another.
Oh, not at all. Because in the heel of the hunt for Leaving Cert, the NEPS psychologist will come out and examine the student before the exam anyway. So it will not be based on the psychological report. And it is, there's a huge inequity in the system, and for, you know, for parents, and there are more and more of them now, as we all know, who cannot afford to pay for them, that there is a long, long waiting list and it is very difficult to get the reports done.
But you mentioned, for example, that it's possible, you know, obviously, that in addition to the psychological report, schools are asked to gather the student's written work, and there's also the gathering of test results and any assessments that might have been done within the schools. And is it possible for, in your experience, for the necessary or the desired waiver or reasonable accommodation to be granted in the absence of a psychological report based solely on the other elements that a school is able to draw together?
It is possible, because on the basis of those, the NEP psychologist may choose to come out. When the schools submit all the information to the SEC, that is then forwarded to the NEP psychologist in the area, and the NEP psychologist will then decide which ones need further assessment or need further looking into, and they will then come out to the school and assess those students.
Okay, in other words, if the prima facie case presented in the absence of the psychological report is strong enough, the NEPS psychologist can then try and see to it that the report is done and that the picture is and in your experience as a special educational needs teacher in a state school, I mean, are they fairly responsive? Are you happy enough with the level of response to it?
Well, yes, because I suppose at that stage of the year they have to come out and they have to do those assessments. But they don't do by any means assess all the students that you will have sent in. Some of them from what you have sent in will automatically be discarded and won't qualify without having any further assessment. But on occasions when they do have to assess students, they do come out and they do it, and it's generally satisfactory.
Let's look at a couple of the specifics. A reader. Now, I mean, I'm so conscious that there will be perhaps a generation of our listeners, because the number of reasonable accommodations in the state exams has, as we, I think, alluded to earlier, has increased significantly over the years because of the reasons you've given: the equality legislation, the various education acts, and the more generalised mainstreaming of students all the way to Leaving Cert who mightn't have been there in the past. So there are people out there who mightn't be all that familiar with concepts of reader, scribe, etc. A reader, as the name suggests, reads the paper to the candidate. What's the basis for the granting of a reader?
The basis of the granting of a reader is where a student would have a huge discrepancy in their general intelligence and their reading ability. Now, it's not to do with comprehension, it's to do with actual reading of a paper or reading in general. And if the psychologist deems that there is a difference, such a difference between the ability to read and the actual ability of the student, and that the reading is holding them back, in that case they will be assigned a reader.
Mm-hmm. And there are standardised reading tests, aren't there, that are administered to candidates? And I think you've got to be scoring, I think it's below the 15th or 16th percentile.
It's much lower than that. It's below the second.
Apologies.
Okay. Below the second percentile generally.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, it really is the granting of a reader alone, then it's really only to the students at very, very greatest need.
Greatest need, absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Definitely, yeah, it is.
And then in terms of in the granting of a scribe, I mean, can a scribe be granted for any particular reasons without the granting of a reader? One often thinks reader and scribe, but...
Actually, it often happens, not often, but it does occasionally happen that you get a scribe is granted without a reader. For example, say a student had... Well, the obvious thing would be, say, they have a difficulty with an arm, they've broken an arm or a shoulder or whatever. That would be one instance. Another instance, sometimes with, for example, a child on the autistic spectrum might be granted a scribe and not a reader. Somebody with fine motor skills, difficulties, in situations like that, it is possible that a scribe would be assigned without a reader.
And I think latterly, in the case of some candidates who would have some form of specific strain or whatever problem with the wrist, that
Absolutely.
Some of those are allowed to do their exams on computers using word processing tools,
right.
aren't they, as well?
That's right, or on tape recorders.
Right, okay. And then the spelling and grammar waiver as a part of the modified marking scheme, and I'd love to explore this a little bit with you, but first of all, is the granting of the spelling and grammar waiver, are the criteria for that similar to the granting of the reader, or is it quite different?
They are. They're very similar to the granting of a reader, except that the three pieces of work that you submit from the candidate are specifically aimed at a spelling and grammar waiver.
Mm-hmm.
So that's specifically for that.
Right. And in that case, my understanding is that they're looking at an error rate.
They are. In fact, the teacher now has to go through it and work out the error rate before it goes in. I presume it's checked again when it does, but you do have to do it at school level as well.
Do you know roughly the rate of errors that qualifies?
My recollection is that it's around 20, if it's around 20% or more.
Which would be, by any standards, a very significant proportion of errors. I mean, if you're reading through that as an examiner, with the limited time that, let's face it, examiners have when they're reading through it, it will be a very noticeable proportion of errors.
Yeah.
And this is based very often, I mean, this is based around dyslexia, isn't it? Is that the overwhelming reason why somebody would get
it? That's the overwhelming reason. Now, there might be some others with speech and language difficulties, but generally not. It's generally a dyslexia issue, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just because, I mean, I'd love to just try and flesh out so that people would understand it better, the whole issue of what a spelling and grammar waiver actually does. For example, it can be of particular use, say, in modern languages, as I understand it, where certain elements of the candidate's answers are simply disregarded for the purpose of assessing the piece of written work in particular.
That's right. For example, in English or in any of the modern languages, or Gaeilge, obviously, there's always a certain element of marks which are for the content, and there's a certain percentage which is for the spelling and grammar. And in the case of somebody who has a spelling and grammar waiver, that spelling and grammar part of it is not included. So the percentage is made out of the content without the spelling and grammar.
Is the spelling and grammar waiver really only of use to the candidate in language subjects? I mean, is it actually quite irrelevant, say, in history?
It's totally irrelevant in history because you don't get marked for spelling and grammar in history.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be, well, when I say totally irrelevant, obviously in the case of somebody who had severe dyslexia, some of the terminology in particularly things like biology or chemistry or science subjects is very difficult, and that would present a lot of problems for them. But so long as the examiner can understand what they're trying to say, no matter how bad the spelling is, they won't be marked down for it.
Sally, I'm told that one of our listeners has inquired as to the implications of getting a spelling and grammar waiver with regard to securing a place in third level. Are there any implications at all? So let's say, for example, if I wanted to study French at university, but I had benefited from a spelling and grammar waiver in French in my Leaving Cert, would there be any implications going forward there?
No, there shouldn't be. Once the spelling and grammar waiver has been assigned in the Leaving Cert, there shouldn't be any further problems with it. Now, obviously, you have to state it when you're going into college, and possibly you would be applying for some of the accommodations in college anyway, and at that stage you would be stating it. And of course, it's annotated on your Leaving Cert, so that would be seen by the college authorities, I presume, as well. But
yeah.
No, it would not have any implications for getting into college or getting into a particular course or anything like that, no.
Yeah, you just mentioned the issue of annotations, and we won't go into specifics because I know that there has been a long-running issue there that may or may not, I think, be going to the Supreme Court regarding the issue of the annotations on this is where there's an indication on the certificate, the statement of results, that you've benefited from a spelling and grammar waiver. But in very general terms, Sally, do you think it's reasonable that it would be indicated that a candidate has actually had some components of a subject not counted for the purposes of assessment?
Well, there are a lot of different schools of thought on that one, Barry. What happened was that two students brought this to the Labour Relations Commission in, I think it was 2006.
It was.
And they won their case, and then the Department of Education appealed it to both the Circuit Court and the High Court, and they won in both of those courts. So I think it's now gone ahead, it's going ahead to the Supreme Court. There are two schools of thought. One would say that employers, colleges and all of that have a right to know. Others would say that the reason that they have got those accommodations is to bring them up to a level with everybody else, and therefore that they shouldn't be there.
Now, I have heard it suggested, actually, sorry, let's just talk briefly about the timeline, because this is important. We've already alluded to it earlier on. If you are looking to see if you're eligible for reasonable accommodation at Leaving Cert level, because at Junior Cert level, it's very, the decision making is more local. The word of the school is often taken as sufficient. At Leaving Cert, on the other hand, as we've been implying throughout the interview, NEPs are much more directly involved. So, in fact, the groundwork begins in fifth year.
That's right. It begins in May. The forms have to be into the State Exams Commission by the end of May in fifth year. And the forms, the ones, for example, for spelling and grammar waivers and readers are 8 pages long per student. And with that, you have to attach any testing that you've done, the 3 pieces of work, psychological report if you have one, a signature from the parents, the principal, all of that has to be on that. So all that has to be compiled in May. And that goes in before, before the end of fifth year.
And this is basically for all of the long-term grounds. That feel free to have a drink of water, Sally, because I know you have a rather persistent little frog there. But you're battling on fantastically despite it. But thank you for doing that. This is for all of the long-term reasons that one would be seeking the waiver, isn't
yes,
it? Physical
yes.
disabilities.
For anything that's not last minute.
Right. And then, as you say, that goes into the SEC.
It does.
And the SEC then alerts NEPs.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. In the case of the reading and scribe, spelling and grammar, all that, well, not necessarily the physical ones, but the other ones NEPs would be involved in. then the generally speaking, the NEP psychologist would be out somewhere around November, December, and then you would have a decision maybe in January, February.
Okay. Talking to people this week when I was saying that you were going to be coming on the programme and I was doing an amount of research, I was getting a lot of people saying to me, you know, they're really tightening up. There has been a significant tightening up as regards granting these. At the very least, a lot of people said to me, you know, we're having more and more candidates who are having to share special centres. Is that your experience?
Very much so, yeah. I think I've spent more hours on the phone to the State Exams Commission this year than I have doing a lot of other things. Yeah, there has been a real clampdown this year where they're looking for students to share where at all possible.
Are they querying the grounds on which people are seeking these, or is it simply, as I said, the sharing up of the doubling up of special centres? What exactly, what form is this tightening
up
taking?
It's a bit of both. They're querying the grounds in some cases, and in other cases then they are trying to double up in the special centres, or triple up in the, if they could, if it is at all possible.
Okay. For example, what you would be looking at there would be two or three students. For example, if you had several students sharing a special centre, would they generally be students with a similar form of disability or of need?
Of need, yes, not necessarily of disability. But for example, there wouldn't be two people with readers in the same centre, obviously, because that wouldn't work. There might, say, be somebody using a laptop and somebody else who just needs a special centre in case they need breaks, or in case they have, for some sort of physical disability, maybe, for example. Maybe something like epilepsy, where you might have a special centre for somebody because you might be afraid that if they had a fit that it would disturb other students. Yeah. And that kind of thing they're trying to amalgamate. Now, I think that's probably a bad example because I wouldn't like to see that happening. But in situations where, say, somebody is using a computer, somebody else might have concentration problems like ADHD, something like that, and might need the centre so that they can take breaks, so they can leave the centre and come back, they might be asked to amalgamate.
Okay, well, Sally Maguire, Special Educational Leaves Teacher at St Raphael's Secondary School in Stillorgan, and also, I might add, Vice President of the ASTI. Thank you very much for coming in and shedding some light on reasonable accommodations. And I should say to you as well that the State Examinations Commission's website, that's examinations.ie, does have a wealth of information on this area as well, that is there for anybody who would like to consult it and who might be of the view that they possibly, or their child possibly, might be entitled to a reasonable accommodation. Sally, thank you very much indeed for coming in.
And thank you, Barry.
That's it from this week's Inside Education. If you'd like to contact us, you can email us at insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. This is Barry Hennessy. Thank you for tuning our way, and goodbye.